quarter a sec.
Okay.
Okay, today is April 24th. My name is Joey Beauchamp at the University of Texas at Austin, H.J. Lucher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports. As part of the 1968 Olympic Team Oral History Project, I am interviewing. Do you go by John or Jack?
My name is John, but everybody has called me Jack all my life.
Okay, so I can call you Jack, is that all right?
Yeah, sure, that's perfect.
Okay,
right.
I'm interviewing Jack Beckner over the phone about his experiences in the Olympics and specifically the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. All right, so let's go ahead and maybe start with your background. I know you have a long history of stuff with the gymnastics movements and stuff.
Right,
so
right.
If you want to share highlights from that, that'd be
yes,
great.
Yes, I'll tell you. I was introduced to the gymnastics as a sport as a junior high school student.
Uh-huh.
And my brother was in high school, and he was out for the team in Los Angeles, where I live and was born. The high schools all had the gymnastic teams. They didn't have some other sports, but they had gymnastics.
Uh-huh.
And following my introduction, I went to the high school, and I did pretty well in one event, parallel bars, and I was the city champ in my senior year. And then moving on from there, I went to L.A. City College, and that's where they had about they had about three or four well-known gymnastic coaches there. They had all been high school coaches, and they moved up to the junior college ranks. And two of them had been Olympians. And so they focused right in on the sport, where many of the high school coaches really didn't do too well. But there were a few that were excellent coaches in gymnastics, and they had experience going into the 32 Olympics, and they'd done very well. After that, I went to USC, and junior college was really great for me insofar as having opportunity. We had a good team. A very good team, and we had several other junior colleges we competed against, as well as the four-year schools that were local.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to SC, as I said, and I was fortunate enough to win a championship in the NCAA on parallel bars. And then in my last year, 1952, I won parallel bars again and the all-around, which was really only an Olympic sport in a sense. They didn't have floor exercise in the as we know it today as an event that year in the NCAA, but they put it in only for all-around people.
Right.
And the college program, which was very big in the U.S., it had the things like rope climb, which was in the 32 Olympics, but not prior to that, not since.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and they had specialists in there, which they do now, and they didn't all of the time I competed as an international gymnast. And following that experience, I made the 52 Olympic team and went on to make 56 in 1960. That was Rome in Australia, and 52, of course.
Right.
It was in Finland.
I noticed each time you competed in the Olympics, you kept improving.
Fortunately. I worked very hard at it. I didn't have a body for a gymnast, really. I was a little taller than all the rest, and that presented problems. And ideal gymnast would be around 5'6" or 5'5", something like that. You know, very strong in the upper body, and I was not strong in the upper body. I had to work at it very hard, and we did. As we went along, we didn't have a number of good coaches, but we developed some weight programs that related very well to the exercises done on rings and places, and we made up for it. It just took a little time.
Right.
I was very lucky. In 1953, the Korean War was on, and I was drafted. And because of my previous experience in, on the national level, Colonel Hull of the Adjutant General's office got me set up to go to Germany instead of Korea and to train. And I did that, and it was quite an experience. I got a chance to work with the Germans. I was a member of the local club in Stuttgart, and it had two former twin brothers that had participated in the 52 Olympics, and were internationally, they were pretty good. We didn't, all of this time that I was participating, we didn't have, it was under the AAU.
Right.
We didn't have enough money to go any place and participate in Europe, do the extra things. We finally, in my later years, we got them. Well, the Army helped us. We went to Rome World Championships. That was something that hadn't been done before. And that is, I was still in the Army, so I competed in the AAU champ, who happened to be on my SC team and 52 Olympian. He came over, and he went down there, and we got to see some real good gymnastics. Without being exposed to the sport, we never knew what it was all about. I mean, really, because they were making progress in Europe, and with the Russians and the Japanese, who came in 52, they were very good, but from then on, they just went further up the ladder and had great programs and were excellent.
What makes those programs different? What helps them elevate to that level? Is it the coaching?
Well, they in speaking with some of the Russians, we have, incidentally, we have a lot of Russians over here these days, and some of the Olympic champs have clubs over here. But they have a program where they identify young kids, boys and girls, and if they can show ability, you know, motor ability, and so on, they start them out very early, and then they start them out in a program that brings them along slowly, but it's a well-developed program. Where we're just left in the high school trying to learn how to do high double leg circles on pommel horse. They do it a little differently, and so young kids can move along if they're trained properly and not get hurt, and also be able to you know, really move rapidly.
Right.
So anyway, that's my background, basically.
Real quick, you mentioned that you were in the Army, and did you say you had contact with mostly Europeans, or did you say you also had contact with the Russian gymnast also?
Yes, I had both. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Barb, please leave.
Opportunities to participate while I was in Germany. They had international meets, and the first time the Russians really came out to West Europe was one of them international and up in Frankfurt, and they invited me along with the people from Finland and every country around.
Right.
That had a team, certain individuals. I mean, just, it was an invitational. It was a big meet. Swiss were very, very good in gymnastics. And they were, they had a couple guys in there, and they'd won some Olympic championships. And in any event, the Russians were there, and it's kind of funny, in that meet at Frankfurt, they took us around, and we saw all the sites out there locally. But there was one Russian gymnast they brought out, and nobody would talk to him. They'd sit someplace else. They didn't want to get near him. And he was a very nice guy. And he didn't speak much English. He spoke little. And
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that odd, being that you're in the military fighting against communism and meeting these Eastern Bloc athletes? Was it awkward?
Well, that's the way works out. You know, I wasn't wearing my uniform, and I was just another guy, and they had people, their people were in the military too, in all the East Bloc companies, the countries. A lot of them were, well, like Zatopek and some of these others, that were colonels and military. They had military rank, and so they were privileged.
Uh-huh.
And could train and do their sport, whatever it was. But and then a chance, we got to go to Rome to the World Championships, and here you're thrown in with a bunch of gymnasts you don't know, and we were thrown in with the Russians, my buddy and I,
did you get to interact with them?
Very friendly, and I'd seen them before, of course, in Helsinki, they're just like good athletes at any place, you know. They're
uh-huh.
They're friendly and so on. But I got a chance to participate in Spain and Paris, and where no Americans had any chances who were in the top echelon of gymnastics, men and women, to go any place and do anything other than the Olympics. And so we got to the year that Stalin died, that was after I was out of the army.
Uh-huh.
I think I was 53, something like that. And that year, I'll always remember going in, you know, where they have the bodies with Lenin and Stalin and all that on the wall there in the Kremlin. We saw that. We had an opportunity to participate in their championships. They ran the World Championships, and we did have a team there. We raised, you did raise some money that year, that was the first time we got out to do something, and it also, we got a chance to go to Spain that year with a couple, with myself and another person, and we enjoyed that. So that's basically the background. I had a lot of experience. I took films and things, which were useful. And in '56, we had five guys from who were former Los Angeles high school gymnasts.
Uh-huh.
Who made the Olympic team. And anyway, you know, that's '56. And we had a couple of us on the team in 1960 in Rome who were LA people. And on the team on the getting to the '68.
Right.
Team, there were four.
So the L.A. area seemed like a good gymnastics area.
It was very good, yeah. We had high school gymnastics. Even if we weren't the best, we were good. And then there was another, you know, the Philadelphia area, Chicago area, those areas, and New York area. They all had gymnastics. In fact, the AAU, National AAU, they were kind of run out of the East Coast, and that's it. And we started to dominate by putting on good gymnasts. And so some of these guys went to the East and the Midwest on our 68 team. We had Dave Thor was our top guy, top all in all. And gymnastics internationally was strictly all around.
Uh-huh.
During my time, was the best five scores count on each event, six events on each event, and so scores dropped out. The six participate or can participate, and you just count the top five, and you count the six events, add that up, and that's your team score. We did have compulsories, too, and they don't have those any longer.
Right. Did they not have individual medals, then, for each apparatus, then?
Oh, they did. They did. Okay. That was a big, long program, I'll tell you. It was like all day long, starting at 9 in the morning with the competition. They'd have three sections go, you know, with a break in between. The judges had to do three groups of six events going simultaneously on compulsories. They had to judge them fairly, and, you know, and as the day went on, guys were getting great scores later on in the day. Judges were tired and
not so critical.
The judges, some were good and some were bad, and then at that time there were about 13 East Bloc countries and thereabouts, and they had their own little get-togethers privately. We found out in later years where they would make sure that they pushed their own guys a little harder than they worried about us. And if anybody in our group looked bad, looked good, they pushed them down instead
right.
of up.
Politics, huh?
Yeah, politics. And they didn't get rid of that until about a couple of Olympics ago.
Uh-huh.
It was still heavy with politics,
right.
And it's unfortunate. And now it's very good. It works pretty well, but they've changed the thing. I judge for a number of years after coaching, and the proverbial 10 score is no longer tops. They've gone up to about 15.
Okay.
By adding different things every year with something new.
Yeah.
But back in 68, we had knew we were going to have to go to Mexico City, and that's the high altitude. That's like going to Denver.
Right.
And so what we did, I got nominated and selected for coach, and the manager was Bill Mead, who was a coach at Southern Illinois, and I'm producing pretty good kids, or recruiting pretty good kids out of at that time a lot of kids out of the East Coast.
Right.
And but anyway, he went to Penn State, and Penn State was still producing a lot of kids too. Their high school programs in those areas, generally. Anyway.
So before we get to you coaching everything with the Olympics that year, real quick, I thought I had read something about the Los Angeles area. There was gymnastics at the beach in Santa Monica or something like that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Can you talk about that for just a sec? I was curious about that because I know, I guess weightlifting was pretty big at beaches around L.A., but I didn't realize.
I didn't realize
gymnastics. Is that because the two kind of went hand in hand or what?
Well, then down at Santa Monica where the pier is, they had what's called Muscle Beach, and every summer athletes would gather down there, and they had a playground set up out in the sand, which was permanently fixed there, and a lot of acrobats would go down there, and they had a very large board area where they'd work on these hand-to-hand, the three high pyramids type thing.
Uh-huh.
With men and women, and a lot of those people were professional acrobats, and then the high school kids would go down there and watch this stuff, and then they started having competitions in gymnastics every year during the summer, Muscle Beach Championship, and kids would come from all over the place and participate, and it was kind of an easygoing, relaxed situation, and a lot of kids were there. They were doing things like a triple flyaway, a triple salto off the rings, and things that nobody had seen before.
And you got to go down and do it also?
Some of us didn't do it, and some of us did do it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was just open to the public. It was basically just open, and a lot of stuff. And a lot of the weightlifters were down there. They were in Gold's Gym and other places. In fact, Tommy Kono and some of those who were on later, '60 Olympic team. I can't recall which ones.
Uh-huh.
And weightlifters would hang out, and bodybuilders also. And it was just a wild place, and it was nice. And a lot of guys went down there and ogled the girls and did their thing. And anyway, it was a fact it was there, and college kids would be coming from the east too, just to come out to visit and to see what it was all about.
Uh-huh. Now, I was going to ask this during the Olympic part of the questions, but since you were so closely related with the weightlifters, or you guys saw them a lot, you know, drug testing became part of the Olympics, and anabolic steroids with weightlifting and stuff. Did you ever see any of that kind of stuff going on?
No, not at all. And I noticed I guess they started checking on the guys around the Mexico City Olympics, did
right,
they?
Right, yeah. That was about when it started, right.
Yeah, they didn't. I think they were just bothering the medal winners at that time, and none of our guys got involved in any of that stuff.
Were
even tested.
I know the culture for building strength, you know, that would be a temptation. But were they just more worried about flexibility and stuff, or
They just weren't into that kind of thing.
Yeah. So your strength building did you guys incorporate a lot of weightlifting, or was it more just...
Yeah, some of us did, and I can't speak for the other people. There are a lot of exercises that can be done without weights with the equipment. Which the way you putting some rings down low and doing cross pull ups and things like that, changing the fulcrum on your arms, and you can get exercise that way. And a lot of us did that too, in addition to the other. But we in traveling. You see a lot of things. That is, if you're going to meets in different places or going to the Olympics, and how they do exercises, just by using the equipment in a certain manner, and that's one of the things where young kids really have an advantage if they're brought along properly. Their strength is accentuated, and they're strong enough. They can get strong enough easier. I can recall much later in my life while I was judging. In Moscow, we were there for Ted Turner's games, the first one he did,
right,
which was in Moscow.
Right, I remember those.
You do or don't? What'd you say?
I do remember those. Weren't they the Goodwill Games or something?
Goodwill Games, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, I remember those.
And this was the first time. And we went to one of the biggest, most popular and well-known gym where the athletes were, and it was summertime, so they weren't working out there necessarily. But this one guy came in, and A.B. Grossfeld. I don't know if that name's come. You've gotten him for any of your stuff, but he's been an Olympic coach several times now. He was mentioning this one guy. He knew him because he'd been over traveling, and he'd been in Russia several times, and seeing also the Russian athletes. And this guy was just doing fantastic strength stuff that nobody, was doing at all. And he'd do it in repetition. On the rings,
uh-huh.
Makes it much more difficult. It's from an L position on the rings, you know, with your legs out in front.
Yep.
Lower your legs, lean forward with straight arms, and with the body straight,
right.
And rise to a handstand.
Right, I remember.
Planche,
I know that
planche press, we call it.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, he was doing those in repetition, and I'd never seen anybody do them in repetition. I've seen people do that, but only one at a time. And that was amazing, but that's how well they're trained. And they have reasonably good flexibility and all that. The gymnasts, the training is keeping the flexibility, but also developing the strength.
So your understanding of most people on the Olympic team from your side, you guys didn't suspect them of having to have help to get to those feats of strength, or it was just training?
Yeah, some guy said that they were using some machine later on, talking with a guy who went and observed the training in Russia. And he said they had a machine where they would electric shock stimulate a muscle group and do that in repetition and somehow increase strength.
Huh, interesting.
So that's kind of interesting. But we also, in traveling, have seen little exercise machines they put together to be able to develop the strength with the younger kids, like a board, a slant board, with a little dolly on top, where you can have something tied like on, you understand, stall bars.
Uh-huh.
Behind you, your stall bars, you can hook on a pair of rings just very, very close on this little 6-foot board and track a little roller, lie on it, and do what would be an iron cross and pulling out.
Right, right.
And you could reverse that and do an inverted iron cross and pull out, pull up. And things like that. They have these things in a lot of gyms that they've manufactured and used. The one I'm thinking of is it happened to be in Bulgaria. I was there once with a judging a team, one of our teams. But anyway, you want to get back to
okay. So leading up to
68.
Yeah, leading up to the 68 Olympics. Had you gotten married or anything, or how were you supporting yourself? I know you mentioned you had been coaching where, at USC?
I was a school teacher, and what I did, I when my old coach there retired, he wanted to retire from coaching. I got the job, is what it was, but I didn't want to accept any payment because AAU wouldn't allow that and still compete. And I wanted to still compete, which I did during those years. I started in, 57 as a coach there, and I didn't accept any money until around 64 was the last time I tried out. And so, I get my meals and when we're traveling and that kind of stuff. But I was strictly a part-time person, and later on I dropped off for a couple of years and then came back, and I accepted money at that time.
Uh-huh.
But that's know, the way it went. And then they canceled the program, as they canceled most of them around 81.
What was behind all of the cancellations of 81? Why was it Title IX?
Well, that's when they brought in the girls. Title IX,
right.
And girls' participation in sports, rather than through this club activity type thing they had. The NCAA
got involved, and the
athletic departments had to produce a little more money, and
right.
So they started to... They might have canceled soccer too, I don't know. At that time, we were both part-time. Over at UCLA, they tried to cut gymnastics, men and women, and their women's program has always been very strong, and swimming. And water polo, they tried to cut those out. Now they ultimately got those back, and then they closed out the men's gymnastics later on. They were having a great run there with their gymnast and winning NCAA championships. So they didn't cut them out there. But there was a lot of fighting going on at all the universities. Arizona State, Oregon had a good program. They just dropped it, and it was terrible.
How do you think that affected gymnastics in the United States overall, then, with all these programs dropping men's gymnastics? Did it hurt us overall in the national scene?
It might have temporarily, slightly hurt the national level, but ultimately, the people went to clubs, and the little kids, you know, ever since the Olympics of Los Angeles, in fact, even before that, kids were getting interested in gymnastics, and with the girls' program, too. That was starting to go through the clubs. And so there were a lot of clubs going, and the clubs actually, through the federation that runs the sport in our country, we had the AAU before. There was a big fight going on during the time of 68 between the AAU and the... it was called the USGF then, the Gymnastics Federation, and the federation ultimately won, and now they're just called the USAG, United States Gymnastics, and now it's when that program got instituted, it raised money, it ran international competitions in the United States and made money through television and things like that. So they could run a full-blown program, which they do, in boys and girls and men and women's program. And now young people at the college age, if they usually go to a college and would get a scholarship. There's still about 10 or 15 colleges that have gymnastics programs. And if they want to stick with their club and their club coach, like the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Twin Brothers, but I can't think of their name right now, in Greece, he won the all-around championship at the Olympics. And those guys, went to a training program with a club. I don't know who was sponsoring, but it was sponsored either by the Hilton Group or by oil companies or something like that. I mean, that's the big thing now. But a lot of those kids go on and go to college where they still have programs. So Michigan and Ohio State Nebraska has, I don't know if they still do, but they were having some difficulties, not with money, but with people and coaches. But in any event, and Penn State, of course.
Right.
And some schools in the East, and I think Cal is still going. They tried to close them out last year, but they raised enough money to sustain the program. And I think Stanford may still have a program.
I think you're right about that.
Arizona State had a program that was like a club program only, and they went in the NCAA college division and had a championships that they ran or participated in each year. And I think it might be the same. I don't know. Might have something like that up in Washington too. But it's cut down on college gymnastics, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But but because of the clubs, you have better coaches who are trained, and they have a training session they'll go through when they run the Olympic trials here in San Jose in June. They have a congress where they give training to coaches and beginning coaches and judges and men and women, and also now they included the rhythmic gymnastics as well as tumbling and trampoline. So
right,
it's big now, and it's provides leadership out of a permanent office where there aren't just one person, it's a whole group of people. It costs a little money, but it certainly has paid off because we participate internationally now all the time in Europe or in Asia or in the United States. And we have a couple meets that that are on the cup schedule. And they run internationally. They run a World Cup, and they have qualifying through these meets that are established as with certain countries like Switzerland and Germany, and Asia has one or two, and we have one.
Right.
So anyway, American Cup is the one that we had, and I think that was on TV a while back. And that's men and women for all of these things.
So how did you get approached about coaching the 68 team? Well, let's start talking about the Olympics that year. How did they approach you, or did you approach them?
Well, the AAU had a committee, and it included the college coaches too. So at the NCAA, they had their annual meeting to select a coach. And I guess because I knew most of I knew everybody there, but the guy who put me up, Frank Wells, he had a club, and he also substituted up at West Point for a while when Tom Maloney, who was a former Olympic coach, when he left for a year on a sabbatical, and he put my name up, and they voted. A number of other names are up too, and ultimately I won. And the NCAA group, they were supporting the federation, and I was trying to be neutral because I was basically. I didn't want to get on anybody's list.
Right.
And so, as Bill Meade was a college coach, I was a college coach in a sense, too, but I also supported the AAU because I realized that that was the only way you could get to the Olympics. And at that point, and that was before the International Committee accepted the federation. They did accept the federation a year or two later. It was a nasty situation with the lawsuits and things like this going on, and I was selected for that, and we the first time, that was way back then, we tried to make the program more profitable, and so we had the, what do I call it, the, I have it. Here it was a North American Championship,
uh-huh.
which included Mexico and some of the other in Canada, the principals, and actually we had other international kids in it too, and so I coached that, and that was. I think in probably 60 something here. It was about two years
uh-huh.
before the Olympics. And then we had, we in Los Angeles, through our Judges Association, we ran a trial to send a team to the to Mexico City for their pre-Olympics. They, you know, wanted to try out the situation. So we went down there for the pre-Olympics, and I had been there previously anyway because of the Pan American Games in 55. They were held in Mexico City. And I was fortunate. Well, Pan American, I was a participant. I won four gold medals there, and our team won... which gave me five, and we also had another Pan American I participated in, and that was in Chicago 4 years later. And anyway, we had, and since then we participated in the Pan American Games regularly. But for this pre-Olympic meet, we went to Mexico City, and so we were used to the altitude in this. Or we recognized the fact that we had an altitude problem. So
right, right.
Part of our training, we had a camp at Natchitoches. That was Northwestern Louisiana State College at the time. And one of my friends happened to be coaching there. He's a kid who was on the that was Armando Vega. He was on the 56 Olympic team with us.
Uh-huh.
And he ran the National AU Championships and first trials. And we selected a group there, and then we stayed for a couple of weeks, or a week and a half, something like that. And with about 20 kids. Because before, we were lucky if there were 20 people that messed with the all-around in the U.S. They just, they were all going to college on a scholarship for doing one event or two events, something like that. And they weren't pushing the all-around, which was the international program. And so anyway, we ran a thing there, and I had a program where I had former Olympians, two guys or three, with the folder so they could score. They could score as well as the people on the floor scoring, and pinpoint problem areas on the compulsories, particularly because compulsories would always get late. We, in those days, we'd receive all that stuff late, and it would have to be translated. But I did a lot of that. Not that I could translate, but I, you know, we had friends here that were German or spoke French. They could do something with them we could get the idea much earlier than we'd ever gotten it before of what we're doing. But anyway, we did that to make sure there was no problems. And we also, because the rules were changing slightly, I had a chance to go just prior to this, to go to the international course, which was held in Rome. And see what these new rules were and what how they. We didn't always get the. We'd get the rules, but we wouldn't know how to apply them in many cases. And so this improved our gymnastics a little bit. And even though we had a lot of young guys there, well, and okay, we ran that camp, then we came to, I believe, went to UCLA, have our final trials after that, and then ran a camp, and we had a training program. It was in writing this time, and not somebody just taking a scrap of tissue paper or something and writing down what they're going to do today, because the coaching wasn't there. The kids did the gymnasts did their own coaching up until that time. So we put the level on these guys that we had. We selected eight out of the finals. We were going to take seven, have an alternate. One of the seventh man would be an alternate, and take the eighth guy and take him with us. And we raised a few bucks doing a couple little exhibitions we were up at Air Force at that time, up in Colorado.
Was that for altitude training then?
Well, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
And we worked very hard, and we also were reviewing these guys regularly every couple weeks, or every week. We would have a test, in a sense, either a compulsory or optional, or a couple of events, and the others on another day, and the others on another day, but it was all written down. And we made exceptions for problems and injuries and things like that. But it was actually a written down program. And
when you selected the team, did you have input as far, or did you guys just go by scores that they achieved at the trials?
No. The scores gave them some security, but not much. We decided, or I did, that we were going to have these competitions, and that is, we're going to review the guy.
Gotcha.
Maybe if he messed up, we'd let him go again if he thought he could do better, but he'd have to take the second score. And we did things like that. And so we were having competitions all along. And the guys were terrific. They really worked hard. And it went all the way up until we had to turn in our team list. And at that time, we identify our alternate. And at that time, that was very close to competition, in Mexico. That one of our best guys, we found out, hurt his shoulder. He had, he had dislocated his shoulder at a time much earlier, and we didn't know this. And he hurt it again, and that was a shame, because he was on our team at the pre-Olympics, and he did very well. He was right there with the top guys that we took with us, and they weren't necessarily the same guys that we took that finally made it with the Olympic team. But in any event, we had a good group to work with. They had a lot of potential. They didn't show it all the time. We had some guys that were weak on some events, and some guys that were just weak. But the guys were, let me list them in the college teams they came from. Dave Thor, he ended up our top man out of the competition. That is also the Olympic competition.
Uh-huh.
Dave Thor from Michigan State, and also from the Reseda High School in L.A. Fred Raffensperger, who I don't know if he was doing graduate work or not, but he was out of college. He had gone to Wisconsin, and he came from a background of the Swiss Turners. gymnastics society.
Isn't his family pretty big in gymnastics through the years?
Well, yeah, yeah. His daughter made the Olympic team. That's the daughter that that his wife had during the time that we went to the actually went to the Olympics. His wife was in labor and had the baby.
Oh, wow.
At that time, he wasn't there, but he knew about it. And the son was on a couple teams, and he was a terrific gymnast, too. They were both terrific. He trained him well, and his daughter, actually, she got one of these diseases that's high fever and lost her hearing, or never got her hearing. And she had that disability, but still competed in gymnastics. It was great.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
What?
I think I've seen her compete. I think I know who you're talking about.
It's possibly, but she's not competing any longer.
Right, no.
I think she's in med school, as a matter of fact. Or went to med school, and she's a doctor.
Yeah.
I don't know how she's managed, so how with a hearing problem. But and Freddie ended up the coach. Fred Raffensperger ended up for a number of years was a coach at Minnesota, and that's where he's living these
right.
days. And in third place was Steve Hugg. Steve Hugg was a high school senior that year. I think he was a senior. Anyway, he made the team barely. He had to be petitioned into one of the situations because he caught that 7-day measles.
Uh-huh.
It was going around right at that time, but he, as a high school kid, he made the team and was in third place of third best on our team. And then Steve Cohen of Penn State was the next athlete. He was pretty good, very strong on rings, and adequate on everything, not except for vaulting and side horse, pommel horse. Sid Frudenstein, was from Orange County down here, and he went to Cal, and was a good gymnast up there, and he was really good at vaulting and floor and those things, but he was weak on pommel horse too.
Uh-huh.
Kennedy Allen was moved onto the team from an alternate position. Richard Lloyd was the from Louisiana. He was the guy that had the shoulder problem with a dislocated arm, shoulder. And so he became the alternate, which, I mean, he didn't compete.
Right.
And so Kanadi was probably, well, he always said he was an Indian, but he was probably the first black kid that participated at this level in gymnastics. And there are several that are very good over the years, though. Since then, his best were he had a number of best, but his high bar was probably best, and I think came in last place, and he didn't do as well as he could have done. He ended up well. I'll just give you an idea now of how our team ended up. It was seventh place. Because it fell down in several places.
Uh-huh.
Seventh place in the team. The judging was a little weak. We thought, let's see. I'm trying to dig it through this paper. We had Poland in fifth place. I don't know who was in sixth. I don't have it.
That's okay.
Are you familiar with the Olympic books, the annual book?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had a supplement that went in that, and that was my report. And so they have the results of the gymnastics, but it's not very good. However, on the computer, it's possible to get the full results of Mexico City.
Right.
Just by checking out Mexican Olympics in 1968.
Yep, sure have.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said you did high altitude training before the Olympics in Colorado.
Yeah.
And then I've been told by a lot of people they were meeting in Denver to get their Olympic stuff. Did you guys have to do that?
Yeah. Well, that's why we had to go back to Colorado, so we went to Air Force, and we stayed there for, they put us up for a while. Well, they didn't put us up. We were at a local motel, but we trained there.
Uh-huh.
And that was just excellent. Their coach at that time was a former gymnast who went to UCLA, and he's from Canoga Park and went to UCLA and went in, and I think he became permanent in the Air Force, and he got a doctorate in PE. Orwin Sampson, and he just opened up the facility beautifully for us and made sure that we had anything we needed, and then we ran an exhibition there for them, and it was very, very well attended, and it was nice.
Good. And then did you guys go down with the Olympic team to Mexico City, or did you fly down early, or how did
No, we came down. They had a schedule. I can't recall whether we were on the first flight or the second flight or the third. You know, there's several flights it went. But we left out of there, and that was it, yeah.
And then, so you arrived in Mexico City, and what were your impressions of that city? Because you said you had been there before.
Oh, yeah, I'd been there before, and it was fine. We didn't, I had heard about the massacre of where the troops were machine gunning the
students down.
Rioters.
Yeah.
And anyway, none of that.
Okay.
I don't think anybody who went on that trip knew that ever happened. That is in our group.
Right.
And we weren't exposed to the drug problems either, and those things. And as far as the Black Power went, everybody said, "Oh, yeah, okay, that's fine." They said it was either okay or, dummies, they shouldn't have been doing that.
Were you guys aware of their intentions to protest before it happened, or did you find out as it happened?
We found out when it happened.
Yeah. Were you guys able to go around to a lot of different events while you were down there?
Normally you can, and we could have, but we didn't.
Right.
We were locked into a training schedule where there was only one really adequate gym, and it was the warm-up room at the auditorium, the opera house, or I don't know what they call it. I've forgotten, but it's an extremely large auditorium, and the competition, I guess, was in the staging area, and behind the where the stage would be. They had a room back there, added on, and that was a training facility, and it was very good. But with all of the teams that were participating, it was a very tight schedule. They had a couple other places too that weren't too good for training, we didn't want to spend too much time at those other places, and so we'd find out when the others were at the good place and when they weren't. And a lot of times they weren't, and we'd have a chance to sneak in on the edge and do a little bit when they weren't using all of the six events,
right?
Because there were six laid out in that gym area.
Were your accommodations okay down there when you guys?
Yeah, they put us in brand new. I guess they were like condominiums, houses. on the high-rise building.
Uh-huh.
And as a coach, we were in with some people from, what's the horse venue called where they do the jumping and all that?
I think, I guess equestrian, I'm not
equestrian,
sure.
Equestrian, yeah. Well, the equestrian had some couple people in there. Well, you know, the bed's all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And then I think our kids, the gymnasts, were on a floor below. And they were in one compartment or apartment, and you know, it was like six kids, six people, and we got along fairly well.
You know, I've seen a picture of those condos and your gymnastics team doing poses on top of
them. Oh yeah, they had the big out in front of them.
Yeah, the
big there.
Mexico sign.
Yeah.
What,
Mexico,
how did that
sign,
come about?
Yeah.
Were you there when they took that picture?
Yes, I was. I wasn't in the picture. I was standing with a photographer.
So how did that come about? What was that all about?
Well, every time George Nissen, you know, equipment manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
He would always make sure he'd make some cards, postcards up with a team on them, team picture, and then give them to the kids, to the team members, and they could send them home or send them to their friends.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, somebody wasn't in that picture, and I think it was
Kanati.
Allen was not there.
Yeah, I believe it was Kanati, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, Kanati was a pretty good gymnast, but he was a guy, he got a doctor's degree up in Washington.
Good for him.
And it was quite an achievement, but he was a little retiring, a little strange and the way he acted sometimes, like he was afraid of other people. And he ended up, I think he had schizophrenia.
Uh-huh.
That's what he ended up as. And ended up in L.A., you know, not taking his medicine, and ended up sleeping under bridges and getting beat up and all this kind of stuff.
That's
too bad. He just died recently. He'd gone back to the facility. He was living with, what had happened, his parents died when he was at school, or his mother who was left, she died. His doctor, his dad was a doctor, I think. His mother was a high school teacher over at Lincoln High School in Los Angeles, and anyway, they had a large house in west part of L.A., very close to Wilshire Boulevard, and they sold it, and without telling Kanati, his brothers, I think, and I think he was supposed to get some money and didn't get any money, and he had all kinds of problems like that.
So he just wasn't in the...
Recently, he was staying with his former high school coach, who, John Muir, who was coach also at Birmingham Junior College. No, that went wrong. It's Pierce Junior College up in Canoga Park.
Uh-huh.
And it got so that... he started arguments, and he finally had to throw him out. The kid was a little tough, but a very nice kid. We've had him meet us at a luncheon and things like that, and you know. But he basically, when he was on the streets, you know, he was on the streets, and that was a bad scene.
Yeah. So he didn't participate in the picture.
He just didn't show up.
Yeah. Was that so you said it was planned, it wasn't like spur of the moment?
Well, you know, he was such a recluse, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought everybody was going to be there.
Yeah.
And they would do this, and the it didn't work out that way.
You mentioned equipment earlier. I've noticed in the picture they're all wearing Adidas shoes. I thought there was some...
No, we got the... Those were the first Adidas things. Well, Bill Meade got them.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. He brought them out of Chicago, I think. Yeah. I don't think Nissan had anything to do with that. We bought them as part of our leisure wear.
Uh-huh.
To go with our sweatsuits and so on.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because I thought I'd read about something with Adidas, the two brothers that started those companies. There was some...
Oh, one was the Adidas company. There was the one with a tiger on it. What?
Puma. Puma and Adidas, yeah.
Yeah,
I thought there was something going on there, and I didn't know if that was part of the Olympics where they were trying to...
No, they were obviously fighting all the time.
Yeah.
Okay,
so you get down to the Olympics. Now, I was going to ask you about the opening ceremonies, but this would be like your fourth or fifth one you've been at.
Yeah. I would say, you know, one of the things that's mentioned here was... the most outstanding thing, you know, the competition was for our kids, and they were so busy getting ready and competing.
Right.
And I'm sure some of them, because they did offer tickets, some of them did go to other events. I can't recall if I did or not, because I've done it so many times.
Right.
But the opening ceremony was very nice, and the closing, and the people on the team, the athletes, they just love that. You know, they eat it up because we'd be there, and the Russians would be next to us, and we'd see everybody that we knew, and they knew us, and that's just the way it was, you know?
Yeah. Do you remember back to your first opening ceremonies when you were competing and how that felt? How did that feel for you?
Oh, that was unusually good because it was in Helsinki, it was a close-in stadium, big enough, of course, to handle all the events for track and so on. But when we marched in, place erupted.
Uh-huh.
When the Americans came in. And all, as you go around, different groups would stand up and yell. It was amazing. But I would say, and then they had this woman in white. They didn't have her. She snuck in.
Uh-huh.
And she ran around the field. She was a peacenik.
Was this in 68 or in Helsinki?
Helsinki.
Okay.
And then 68, I don't recall any problems.
Yeah.
But...
And you guys marched in the parade, the coaches, too?
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we were part of it. And the 56 Olympic team in Australia was interesting because that was the loudest crowd because the seating was over 100,000.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very large stadium. But everybody really went wild. But that's the type of thing. Well, you know how it is. You've seen it on TV if you haven't been there.
Yeah.
You can see how it is. People go wild, the athletes go wild, everybody goes wild.
Yeah, I bet you that's a thrill to be in it. That's
cool. Well, both the opening and closing are just wonderful.
Now...
But of course, the most recent, the Chinese one, it's never been as elaborate a...
Yeah, I saw that one.
Olympics as that one. That really set them back a few bucks.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. So, as coach, I've asked other people I've interviewed about the media and stuff like that, but I guess as a coach, you might have a different perspective if you're deflecting attention or trying to keep people away. Did you have to deal with the media much when you were down there?
No.
For interviews, things like that?
No, they didn't bother us. really have any problem with the media at all. But I can't, that I can recall.
Right.
Yeah.
What about from previous Olympics? Had you had to deal with newspapers or anything like that, people talking, or had you... Was the media, your impression, was there a lot of media around the places?
Well, there was a lot of media around, but never so much that it got in the way.
Did they purposely try and keep the media in certain areas and away from the athletes, or how did that
work? Well, that's basically what they do.
Uh-huh.
But they always seem to show up.
Right, right.
Different places, but yeah, media is much bigger these days than it was in those days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I was just wondering if maybe after, like, the protests had happened, if the media got, you know how they work into a frenzy sometimes? I was just wondering if those, you know, the black protest stuff, if that got them more fired up.
Well, you know, that was a big thing at the time.
Uh-huh.
And the press made a bigger thing out of it, so it's hard to say. We, this group, I think it of athletes, you know, they all went on and either coached or did something involving the sport, judged, on just hung out, worked at a club, did things like that. But this was a start of the federation, and it's the starting of our gymnastics program internationally. You know, with the federation, it's really well organized now. And
so you've been a part of it for so long, you can see all the changes that have come about.
Oh yes, gigantic, and changing. Oh, a couple of Olympics back, they changed the judging finally, and so the cheating was diminished considerably. Our athletes were a lot better. We have, in addition to our regular American coaches, we have a lot of foreign coaches.
Uh-huh.
And some good, some bad. But it was all for the best. We have a lot of very good Japanese gymnasts that are here now. And as I said, almost all of the former Olympians from Russia are here. It's a lot of them in clubs.
That helps the programs, I'm sure, a lot.
Yeah, let's see. You know, they started their programs in those countries. They start very young, and they select those people who are going to go ahead and move ahead.
Uh-huh.
And then they give them everything they can take, and they rapidly move along. I mean, they were doing stuff that we hadn't seen before at the Olympics that we're talking about, the 68.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you don't have exposure, you can't find out what's going on. And if you don't have, you know, a coach or somebody who's going to be able to tell you what to do, you're in trouble. And you get that through exposure of your program, and that also helps with the judges. Some of the judges are pathetic.
Yeah.
And not all, but many at the Olympic level.
Do you base pathetic being like non-biased, or just that they're abilities to judge?
They might be non-biased and just not knowing.
Right.
Or not coming from somebody who's knowing. You know, they reward some people with a job like that. Now it's much, much more difficult to do.
Right.
Because they they have extra people on the floor who have to do a shorthand and write down what's going on. And then in case it's reviewed, if you don't have a camera reviewing it, you have this guy who's got it written down, and you go over it that way with the head judge.
Uh-huh.
But they changed the judging so that instead of a four with a head judge, whose score doesn't count, to five, taking three scores and averaging the scores, and that way it makes it a little more difficult to cheat. And the other thing is they've changed the rules almost every 4 years. They change the rules, and the rules are pretty tough. And in fact, you have to be very good, and you don't want to get hurt.
Right.
And the rules are, we had A parts, B parts, C parts. And when I was coaching and participating, then they added risk, originality, and virtuosity as different things that you started at 9-4, and they take up the difference between the 9-4 and the 10 points. And if you don't have them, you don't do certain skills, you can't have them, then you're in trouble.
Right.
And that leverages the thing so that it makes it a little more difficult to cheat. You can't just say, well, I thought he deserved this and that and the other. And when I started out participating, for example, in Helsinki, they hoped that the compulsories at that time would be culling the thing more that it's culling out the bad visions, etc. But it didn't. It just created things being worse because of bias. And the head judge, if he happened to be from an East Bloc country, you got to look out because you're not. He can smile at you and be your friend off the court, but he can also take a couple tenths from your score that you should have. And that's kind of interesting, mentioning that. This great gymnast, Chukarin, he won the all-around in 56 and also in 52 in the World Games also.
Uh-huh.
He actually, after judging, they let him judge in 1960, and after that they didn't let him out any longer.
Yeah.
Because he was honest. And he'd call them the way they're supposed to be. And the Russians didn't like that. And he was a Russian. Or, well, he was a Ukrainian, but he was, the best man in Russia. And everybody knew him as the best man. And knew him for honesty, too. And that was what was so amazing. He lost the job because of international judging, because he wouldn't go over this business.
Right.
So, anyway.
So, in the Olympics, finishing up with the 68 ones, was there anything that was memorable to you that stood out, or anything that we haven't covered about those games that you wanted to chat about?
I can't think of anything right now.
Yeah, you've done a great job of describing everything, fully, so I think you've covered it. What do you think the legacy is for that year? I mean, you've been in so many Olympic games. What is it people are going to remember or take from the 68 Olympics? What legacy did they leave? I think I've interviewed so many people from this team that I found so many quality individuals who, besides being competitors, also went on to do great things with their lives. You know, a lot of them are doctors and, you know, have gone on to higher education and done great things with their lives.
Well, there are a lot of those guys aren't necessarily on the Olympic team. Some of them are just trying out for and missing.
Uh-huh.
And there's one guy, I know he's a... they have what they call a Nissen Award at the NCAA. It's for outstanding gymnast for a period of years and just outstanding work. And this guy, Steve Hug, he earned that 1 year. And anyway, one of the guys that he's a doctor, he's a doctor, he's a millionaire, and so he's taken it over and he's doing things, but he's outstanding in his field, whether that is doctoring.
Right.
And there are some like that are outstanding in their field. The gymnasts are a little different than, well, of course, all the athletes are a little different.
Yeah.
They're a little different when they select a sport like this. A little crazy, too. These days, guys really get injured, and they get injured bad. And fortunately, the one thing we have today that we didn't have in earlier days is we have pits with rubber sponge inside.
Right, for landing and...
What's that?
For practicing and landing and stuff like that?
You definitely, yeah. Or if you fall off...
Right.
The bar, you might survive. You might still get injured, however, but it's not as severe.
So when you were practicing in your younger days, did you just fall on the ground, solid ground, or what?
I fell there, Matt.
Matt, okay.
Yeah, Matt. Yeah, oh, yeah, I went to Australia with a toe that felt like it was broken. It's all swollen up. Matt, last days of the competition, that is our inner squad meets, I stepped on the side of a mat. That's the mat is 4 feet wide, and you need five. It's easy to be off at a slight angle and step off and put your toe under the weight of your body and hurt yourself.
Yeah.
But, people can get killed. It's a dangerous sport.
Well, it's the number one leading sport for injuries, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Really? I thought I read that somewhere.
Oh, you might have.
Because of back injuries, maybe. That and cheerleading, I think it was, too.
Oh, cheerleading, I can see.
So what is it about the 68 Olympics that you think their legacy is, or what will they be known for?
Well, we know it's not winning, because they didn't win. The closest they got was a tie for ninth. And that means you didn't get a chance to go to the finals. They had the top six guys go to the finals.
Uh-huh.
We had two guys in ninth, in a tie for ninth, or for one in ninth place. That would be the kid, Steve Cohen from Penn State on rings, and the other one was, I think it was a tie for sixth place, and it's Dave Thor, the guy who won the all-around for us, or won, was our top guy, and his was Pommel Horse. He was excellent on there, and he was better. He was like in the top three in my money, but that's not what he got for score. And what happens is if you're tied for last place, you don't get to go to the finals. If your all-around score is not higher than the other two that you're tied with.
Oh.
So he didn't make it because one of the Russians is actually a guy who's outstanding on rings. and terrible on pommel horse. He was tied with him, and it shouldn't have been a tie at all. And so he didn't get a chance to go in the finals. But that's as close as we got, and it's hard to say, other than they did an excellent job, actually. They had a lot of faults, but they had certain, each one had certain events that he was just super at. Steve Hug went on, made some other Olympic teams, and was three or four years all-around champion of the NCAA at Stanford. And Roethlisberger, super coach, international coach. Steve Cohen, the ring guy. I think he's a doctor now. Mm-hmm. And Freudenstein is a PhD in physics. And there's a guy who could just stand on the floor and do a backflip standing without running and doing anything prior to it, and then do front flip and land on your feet.
Wow.
All the way standing. I mean, he was magic, and I can't recall whether it was the compulsory that got him on the floor exercise, but he was our big hope on floor. A legacy, I don't really know. It's hard for me at this point.
Right.
To say, other than the fact that they were just a good, solid team, and the most solid that we'd had up to that time. And it's the first time that we really tried to do something with the sport, with the pre-meets and that type of thing.
Right. Having participated in so many Olympics, would you have any advice for people who were trying to be Olympic hopefuls, or what would you tell people who are into the sports, especially gymnastics?
Oh, gosh. Stick with it, but you got to get coaching, and you got to start young enough. And so that's not really their decision, it's their parents' decision.
Do you think that's good for parents to try and push them into a sport, or should they?
I think in today that everybody's got to be organized and have some experience in sports.
Right.
You know, even the littlest kids, they like some of my grandchildren, they're playing ball, soccer, they're playing baseball. They're doing gymnastics. They're taking a run at everything, and that's terrific.
Yeah, so giving them exposure to a lot of stuff.
That's really important, and being on a team or participating in groups like that, that's good. You can stay out of trouble that way. Kids so frequently get into trouble. You know, junior high school kids and things like that. It can be terrible, but if they have something where they're interacting with other kids and with some adults, it's really helpful, I think, in stabilizing the society.
Uh-huh. So earlier we had talked about you had coached after this Olympics and you spent years at USC. Let's close by talking maybe about what you've done since the years at USC, if there's any highlights you want to hit upon. Did you stay involved with the gymnastics?
I judged. They dropped our program in, I think it was 81 or something like that, 1981. And our facilities were not good, but it was no excuse to drop the program. And their football team was making a lot of money, but the president of the university was forcing athletics to spend more of their money on things like air conditioning and lighting and of their building, and this kind of stuff. The current president's a little different, I think, than, and some of the others were a little different. But since then, what I've done is I helped by judging little kids' programs. They have a program with the clubs, and the clubs are organized in Southern California. And they have, you know, five levels of competition with a compulsory exercise. That's, they're learning techniques of how to do certain things. I did that, and I also judged the colleges when they were going full bore. And I had several opportunities, like one, to go judge in Moscow, Ted Turner's Scooterville Games. And I went to Tokyo and judged a cup meet over there. We had a couple of Americans entered, and they did very well. A kid from Stanford and a kid from Ohio State. And, you know, it helps to get your judges and your people, even if they're not your best person, over there and present a good show by not messing up. We so frequently never realize that in our early years that stability is important. A coach, I think in Helsinki, told me to leave out certain things in my high bar routine, which was one of my better routines. And I did. I got a higher score than I'd ever gotten before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You want to make a nice showing of whatever it is. And I think it's so important. And judging, let's see, we had the Goodwill Games up in, I think, in Washington State at one time, too. And
yeah.
We did a good job against the Russians at that time. That's when the Russians, just before they started to burst out again. And the Japanese definitely had superior programs to everybody else. And the East Germans were pretty good at it, too.
Right.
Particularly in the girls' programs, more so than in the boys' program.
Have you gotten to go back to any of the Olympics since the 80s? Like, I know we had the 84 Los Angeles one, and then Atlanta. Have you gotten to go back?
No, it's gotten so that it's a little tough. Before when I got to go to, I went on my own to Munich when they had the Olympics there. Yeah, and that's where one of the guys from Muscle Beach, a weightlifter, was in that group that got blown up. Israeli.
Really?
Yeah. He was a guy who was hanging out at Muscle Beach for years. But
and he was competing for the Israeli team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those unfortunate things. Yeah, you get to know some of these people when you go to a few different events and Pan American events and so on. You get to know everybody, and they're pretty good friends. Really, the athletes I'm speaking of, and
right.
and the judges too. Let's see. I went to another one. I can't think where.
There was 76 in Montreal.
Oh yeah, we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I went with one of my friends who was on the 56 with me.
Oh, good.
And yeah, we went up. He's a good friend of Sammy Lee, the diver.
Uh-huh.
And we went up, ran into Sammy, found out where we could stay. He told us, try this place. And We went there and got a place to stay, and then we had our tickets, and we getting rid of some tickets, and here we found some people I would never think of finding selling tickets out in front of the gymnastics. It was full. But a guy who has a lot of money and bought tickets just to sell them. Yeah, that I don't like.
Yeah. Gymnastics has become very popular in the Summer Olympics.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. It's a crowd pleaser.
Why do you suppose that is? What is it about gymnastics that would appeal, do you think?
It's like people being attracted to the circus.
Oh, yeah?
Sure. A lot of the people in are former gymnasts in the Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
They recruit.
Being able to do physical feats that you normally can't do, normal people can't do probably. You know,
yeah,
the strength and the coordination and balance. And
yeah. Well, that's the way it is. It's a good training program. It lets you understand your body, too.